Welcome back. It's a sunny day in Brooklyn, and we're back in Brooklyn. Hey, don't cut that out.
Jeez, I've never seen you like that.
Hey guys, welcome back to Books Brothers. This is Andy.
This is Tom.
And today we're talking about Osomu Dazai's No Longer Human. Tom, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, refrain from doing any Japanese voices throughout the pod. So yeah, we're doing the book No Longer Human. It's written by Osamu Dazai in Osama bin Laden in 1948. Dazai was not 6'4". He was probably 5'8", if I had to guess.
You're trying to make a joke about Osama bin Laden?
Yeah, he was tall.
1948.
So that is post-World War II, post Hiroshima. Mm-hmm. And this book is short and sweet. It's not too long, and it's just about essentially just the author, and he's just a guy, a Japanese citizen who's just sort of living his life.
In Hobayozo.
Sort of, what would you call that? Like auto fiction or something? Is that what that word means? People have been saying that word a lot.
Yeah, it's auto fiction. I mean, if it's based on his own life. It's kind of like, I don't know if I'm boss babying this, but it's kind of like On the Road for the Japanese.
I think of it like that in Catcher in the Rye. It's like,
it's a lot of the navel gazing of the Japanese in the sense of their spiritual kind of journeys they typically go on as Japanese people, I think.
And remarkably, I think it has so much in common with just the canonical line of books and content and media that's basically get, like dudes who listen to Creep by Radiohead.
I want a perfect body.
Let's read the back cover.
Yeah, you have the book, by the way. I do not have the book.
Okay,
so
I do have the book.
You in will my be master, arms, right? Bookmaster.
Portraying himself as a failure, the protagonist of Osamu Dazai is No Longer Human, narrates a seemingly normal life, even while he feels himself incapable of understanding human beings. Obayozo's attempts to reconcile himself, I guess that's the main character's name, Obayozo attempts to reconcile himself to the world around him begin in early... Attempts to reconcile himself to the world around him begin in early childhood. There's a typo on the back cover. It says, himself to the world around him begin in early childhood.
Himself to the world around him begin in early childhood. It doesn't say began?
It says, Obayozo's attempts to reconcile himself to the world around him begin in early childhood. Okay, that's right. That's correct. Continue through high school where he became. He becomes a clown, quote unquote, to mask his alienation. It eventually lead to a failed suicide.
It's weird
attempt.
To read this. Stop reading this. It's a little too like now we're just like digging into the character arc, you know? Stop.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He's just attempting to reconcile himself with the world around him, right?
Wait a sec. So we should talk a little bit more about the book. This is the most popular book in Japan. This really is literally On the Road, Catcher in the Rye level for Japanese people. It's like huge.
It says, still one of the 10 best-selling books in Japan. No Longer Human is a powerful exploration.
Okay. Yeah, and it almost like is the godfather of almost a whole genre. As we have in, you know, America and Europe of like, Sartre and, Camus, he has that status for Japan and the world, mm-hmm. but, a lot of Americans don't know about this book.
Just a production thing. I don't think you should have a noise gate while you record.
I just figure it makes it easier.
Because as you're talking, I can hear it go. Burr, burr,
burr, no, burr, that's impossible, burr, Andrew. Burr. That noise gate is not. You're listening to the Discord noise gate, not the one I'm recording. Okay. You don't have the ability to hear what I'm recording right now.
Okay. And you're recording my voice, right?
You understand? Yeah, like a scratch track.
All right, what are you saying?
Just to sync it up. I actually forget.
Great.
Let me try to recall. Just the status of the book as a Satra Kamu level author, but for Japan, and he's not that popular in America for whatever reason. A lot of people don't know about him.
Yeah, but, so okay, we want to so follow the blueprint here. We want to follow the blueprint.
Well, yeah. So next we should do why are we reading this?
Well, it looks like Osamu Dazai.
Oh.
He died in 1948, which is like, so he just straight up lives the book and then dies?
Yeah, he KO'd. Oh, so this is interesting. You're going to find this out on
1958. Okay, so he died 10 years before the book was published. I didn't know this.
In English. The book was published in 1948 in Japanese and in English, 1958.
Oh, okay. What did I not know?
Did you not know that he KO'd himself just like in the book in real life?
How's that? He drank himself to death?
It's what the character maybe, now we're kind of jumping ahead, but it's what the character kind of does 75% of the way through the novel. It doesn't succeed. What the character in the novel does not succeed at, he succeeds at
the jumping doing. In the water?
Yeah. He does that with a woman in real life. And the police find their two bodies 6 days later floating up along the shore.
Wait, so he wrote in the book.
He has his character do something in the book that he fails at and that he does successfully in his actual life.
But so he creates a character who fails at it and does a bunch of stuff after.
Wait, this is weird. Wait, why aren't you understanding
this? This doesn't make any sense because these are like his found journals or is
no,
this
Andrew, this
a
is a
story?
Novel. This is a novel that he had with a publishing house, and the whole pretense is this is all fiction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this is informative.
This is interesting. I thought you knew this. Yeah, you're kind of.
Well, I was checked out with this book, as you know. It's obviously like a hard read. And when I bought it, I couldn't stop thinking like the book clerk was like, looking for a negative evening. I was this is good, buddy. This is going to take me a year to read this.
Well, I always think of ages like the author or the character is 27. So I feel like you're slotting in perfectly here.
Yeah, I think this definitely comes in like the 27 club thing of like kind of reaching the tail end, meeting the tail end of your 20s and looking back upon what you effectively like think was your young adult life, like your 20s, right? And evaluating that internally and like coming to grips with that.
Yeah, you're fantasizing your life. You're turning it into a story.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I don't know if fantasizing is the right word, but yeah, you're
in terms of imagination and the fact that whatever you think is not, you know, is a
in terms of imagination.
In the sense of when you think of your life, you can't think of everything. You're just picking certain things out and creating a kind of fantasy story because your memory's not that good.
I don't know if this story is as important as it is just a evaluation, but yeah, he's like clearly, he's looking back on everything in a negative context and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. That feeds into more his character. He's a very negative guy.
Yeah, I mean, I would sympathize with that certain points of the book. I don't like definitely not the childhood part, but like in his childhood, he's like, is he depressed in his childhood?
Is he depressed in his childhood?
It's kind of so-so, and he's like, he just hates he doesn't really hate everyone. He just doesn't necessarily feel like a human.
Yeah, I would say, well, this is maybe jumping ahead. I have a grand, big reveal. I have a grand, almost thesis about this guy.
Go.
I don't know if we should get into it this soon, but let's just talk about his early character arc. He was, you know, he's this young boy, and I believe the book starts this way. It's like him looking at a photo of him, his young self.
Yeah.
And he's like describing how his face, when he looks at it in a photo, is just a pure mask, and he's just looking at this mask.
It's like almost like a blur.
Yeah, blur. And he was basically just a child. I kind of, when I was reading this book, I thought a lot about Jim Carrey, oddly enough.
Okay.
Just because
like a clown.
A clown and a person who, especially in like the 2016 zone, had like a really total drop off, like spiritual drop off in death, and became this like harbinger of death, like a grim reaper. But then is also a person who's just like always trying to make people laugh, but has this hollowness deep within.
Well, I don't know. I think he was, well, what happened in that time is he inadvertently, allegedly, got his girlfriend at the time, or fiance at the time, addicted to painkillers, and basically, which led to her death, allegedly, I guess. I don't know, but
that's definitely part of it, but
after that is when he started his whole like guru bullshit.
Yeah, no, but even more, even the young Jim Carrey, there's a certain emptiness and a strangeness. And I think of the stories where he says like he was just like haunting Hollywood before he was famous, and he was like, I want to be famous. And he stood up on Mulholland Drive in the middle of the night and like did like a ritual and like screamed at the top of his lungs, like on Mulholland Drive, like, I'm gonna own this town. Like just a very weird, basically I'm saying he's a soul who's lost and suffering, and his way out is to charm people with a mask, which is what what's his name, Oba does. So I don't know if we've said that well enough. Oba as a child, was depressed, and he realized that he could make people laugh, and he started to use that as a way to just get by, because he's so depressed he can't function, he can't do anything. But he realizes like, oh, this is something I can do to get through the day, is I can make someone laugh, and they won't be like, are you okay, Oba? Like, do you need therapy? Essentially, is what he's doing, is kind of masking anyone realizing his damage.
Well, I mean, I empathize with that, because like I would say in middle school, elementary school, I had best friends, you know, or like a best friend. And then middle school, it all kind of dropped off, and I didn't have that ability to like, when you're a clown, people don't see you as like, they see you as that, like whatever a clown is, like when, you know, he's in the clown makeup, he's like a mythical being, you know, he's not like an actual person. And then, you know, you don't have to worry about them thinking about who you really are. But that's not what I was thinking about in middle school. But
yeah, he describes he's really acting his way through life.
Yeah, like I didn't have anyone that like looked at me like a person. So the best thing I could do is just like entertain them to get some degree of like attention from other people, which is kind of different from him, I guess, but because I don't know.
Yeah, his depression is very seated in like classical existentialist stuff. I pulled this moment.
Philosophy alert.
I don't have the exact quote, but this is what I wrote down, is there's a moment where this is like when he's a child and he's coming to consciousness to life and the world and everything. And he says that he's talking about the sheets on a bed, and he says the uninspired quality of them, just the fact that they're flat and white, annoyed him. And then when he learned about their practical purpose, He said, "This act of human dullness sent me into a dark depression." So just the fact that we're humans in like meat sacks and that we need sheets to separate us from the comforter so we don't dirty the comforter just like annoyed him or something. And he's so mad about the fact that he is a big squishy bug. Mm-hmm. And he's like, to me, it's the realization that you're a human and you're not anything greater is kind of what he's going through.
Well, he's just a nihilist, right?
And what I'm saying turns him into a nihilist. And to me, at the root of it is probably a superiority complex or chronic cleverness. Like he's too smart for his own good. Mm-hmm. But those are kind of the same thing often.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing I don't like is when, I feel like maybe we talked about it before, is like when someone takes a condescending perspective to anything just because they are negative about it, like they nitpick everything. Like just because you criticize everything doesn't mean you're better than that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think if like any kid has that sort of like, I don't even know if it's like really smart. It's just like, you're just like, have a certain type of sensitivity and which leads to that existential gloominess, even as like a young person, that really sets you off on the wrong course. Because like at the end of the day, you're still just kind of like, you're not thinking about, you know, what you want to do with your life or like any sort of fascinations with anything, you know. I guess I think maybe it's like you're just getting into philosophy like too young, you know.
Yeah.
As soon as his, you know, lights came on when he was, you know, a young child, he just was too philosophical.
And he's taking the classic plunder, which you know, almost all philosophers make, which is my reality, what I'm thinking and feeling must apply to all and probably has to do with all and not with me. Like mm-hmm. when I'm commenting, like I just read this note I took when he speaks on behalf of society. And I feel like he's really just speaking about himself. And yeah, then there's a quote. He says, "What is society but an individual?" So he's like,
"Oh yeah,
I'm an individual." Yeah. And so everything I'm thinking about and experiencing must be a comment on society itself. Like I'm a microcosm of exactly what society is, as opposed to a reaction to it.
I kind of took that as like, I just lost my train of thought. I took that as honestly like him briefly overcoming his fear of other people and sort of having a positive uptick in his life. That was
a good moment
to me. Yeah, like to face other people as they are, as one single thing, as opposed to like a representation of a massive thing.
Well, I guess
I read that helped me kind of like just for a moment, because I kind of forgot about it, but that helped me contend with that kind of thing I still have a problem with.
I just saw him doing the opposite throughout. Maybe he says that, but I always saw him doing the opposite, which is not giving people any credit, not treating them like he would like to be treated, and just kind of always quickly characterizing. I'm thinking of Flatfish, who's he's that guy, this older gentleman who like takes him in. And by the way, it's like
a friend of his dad's.
A friend of his dad. He's always going between houses in the book. He's just wandering around. There's not a strong plot here. And Flatfish, there's a scene where Flatfish offers him help, but he's also while he's doing it, he's kind of subtly, the subtext is he's asking him to move out too, like, you know, get your shit together and move out. Mm-hmm. I don't take the quote down, but Flatfish kind of subtly asks him why he tried to commit suicide. And so he's like giving him a moment to like open up. And instead of opening up and talking to Flatfish as if he respected him as a human being, he just does his usual thing and just lies and moves on. and criticizes Flatfish for like even not having the decency to let me live with you. Like, you're gonna ask me to move out, like,
Yeah.
Like, it's just such like baby childish behavior to me. And then he's always doubting that humans have the ability to love. Like, he's like, Flatfish is just, he just wants money and blah. But then he's not showing Flatfish any love by recognizing that it's annoying to live with someone, to make them put you up and shit. And like, it's annoying that I'm not opening up to him about my suicide. I'm not showing him love. But then he's like, it's everyone around me who doesn't, they don't have love.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like a good, I mean, the whole thing obviously is like a character study of someone who is like very deeply depressed in a sense of like what goes on in their mind. And I don't think it like, I don't know where I'm going with this.
Fuck. Well, I see what you're saying. This is, we're sort of keep slipping into like, I'm going to go into my big theory alert. Which I don't want to do too early. I don't want to blow my load too soon here.
Okay.
But another detail about his, because I feel like we should talk more about the book details, is he, when he's developing his pessimism and his negativity and nihilism, as a child, one of the things among a thousand things that sort of push it further into the nihilistic thing is his love of science. And whenever he uncovers a new scientific fact, like in this case, the one I have written down is he learns about bacteria and how it's all over everything and food. And it's just like we're living in this disgusting bacteria ridden creep zone. That's one of the things that sort of throws another log in the nihilism fire. But then mm-hmm. 2/3 of the way through the book, in classic Oba fashion, he says, he's like, oh, never mind, I don't care about that. And he says it's a ghost of science and that it has no real presence in his existence. But it's something that created him, like who he is, and then he sacrifices it, you know, 2/3 of the way through the book. He's like, ah, that doesn't even matter. And he's just on to the next thing, which in his adult life, I guess, is communism.
Well, I mean, that's on... It's like I'm trying to get a just like explain the book, because like I'm gonna assume anyone who listens to this probably hasn't read it. Like it's a very internal character study. Like most of the time, I think character studies tend to be from like a third person perspective. This is a very internal kind of unfolding of like how this type of person is in on the inside, right?
That's a good point. Yeah,
because I like. I mean, I think the most beautiful part of the book is unfortunately like the end of it, which is kind of strange that the guy who wrote it actually killed himself, because it's such a like nice little summation of like what it. It's a perfect reflection of what I was just talking about, of how the whole book is like this internal experience, and then once there is an actual external, like there's an objective external comment on him, on like Yozo.
What is that? I read this like a year ago, so I've kind of forgot.
It's like he dies at the end of the book, and then someone finds his ostensibly, I think it's the author, finds these books, these notebooks. And he finds, I think, a woman near the end of the book that he befriends, like in the tavern. I think maybe like a bartender or like a maiden, or I forget, they call it the lady of the night, like mistress person. But she's asked about him, and she goes, like, the Yozo we knew was easygoing and amusing, and if only he hadn't drunk. No, even though he did drink, he was a good boy, an angel. You know, like, so there's clearly like this highlights the internal, like, the issues with being depressed as far as like it just being a purely internal experience.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone on the outside is like, that's kind of, it's almost like a comical ending to me. He's like, huh, he seemed like a pretty nice guy.
Yeah.
Because he's on the inside. It's like, it's just kind of like endless, like dirging about fucking, you know, really neurotic crap, you know,
which is how he definitely felt. And he's given opportunities to open up, and he just never does. And one thing I thought about when you said that too is he was a cutie patootie. So women probably loved him, and he was funny, and he's a fun drinker and shit, and he's a poet. So he was probably good with the ladies.
Charmster. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, he says that in the book a lot. That's like his only kind of like value, I guess. It's kind of like his little privilege or whatever. But he comes from like a upper middle class family, and everything is kind of fine for him, pretty much, up until he starts to ruin his own life, basically, because he gets depressed. And when he gets depressed, he tries to objectively evaluate life being like meaningless and stuff. And he's trying to make these sweeping claims about everything, but it's really just like, you're sad and you're thinking this because you feel sad. Like, they're driving these thoughts because you feel bad. So your brain is finding a way to,
excuse yourself.
Sure. And devaluate everything about life. You know, that's what I think about when I like think about when I'm depressed, or like, you know, when I know I'm not depressed is when I'm enjoying things. And when you're enjoying things, you're not thinking about, especially little things, you're not thinking about, you know, negatively, you know, evaluating everything, you know, what you do when you're depressed, because you're not enjoying everything. Everything sucks.
Yeah. Which is it's no small coincidence that Freud and Marx, who are the sort of champions of like, blame everybody but yourself, are like kings of the intellectual world at this time in
the 40s,
the year, yeah, the time, this time in the time.
Freud with his pen and Marx with his axe.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that to me is what's feeding into it. And I actually have a quote here. I don't know. This might be relevant. He says on page 158, am I what they call an egoist, or am I the opposite, a man of excessively weak spirit? I really don't know myself, but since I seem in either case to be of massive vices, I drop steadily, inevitably into unhappiness, and I have no specific plan to stave off my descent.
Yeah, it's a pretty common, I've been experiencing it honestly in the last year of like, being unhappy about certain things, and then especially with like drinking just to like enjoy anything, and then it eventually just takes the like can of like the party trick can of peanuts thing, it makes that explode out of the can. It makes it explode out of the can even harder. It makes everything worse. Like, it makes your baseline worse when you come out of those drunks or whatever. And he just kind of knowingly does it. But yeah, that's something I do resent. And I've come to like, on my journey of like being more mindful of like my depression. And like, I do resent, people that are like pretentious about their like nihilism, you know, like mm-hmm. people that choose to criticize and like, hate everything. I think we talked about that in the last book we did like a year ago, the rest and relaxation. It's a similar kind of thing. This to me was like a more masculine thing. It's just like definitely Japanese, and definitely like a more masculine journey of depression.
The interesting thing in that point is honestly how much in common I felt as a man from, you know, the 21st century America to a guy in 1940s Japan. Like, America, it's shocking how different our cultures are, but how exactly the same life is and feels, which is kind of like a kind of unifying idea. Is like, to me, Japan, as he describes it, it feels the same as America. It's just minus crime.
I don't know if that's important, though.
He doesn't really talk about crime.
Well, we still have the same brains, you know? Like, he's just interacting with his depression in the exact same way.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's interesting. It's something I find always when I'm reading books from, you know, 500 years ago from the other side of the world. It's like there is no cultural thing that controls life like I think we do. Like, honestly, Oba thinks there is. That, like, humanity is always at the top of the surface of existence and isn't being, like, masked by culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I also think maybe why the book is popular is because it's not heavily veiled in a Japanese identity, which maybe a lot of other books are in Japan. I don't know. But
yeah. I find that's just like a very like American thing to do, is to just think about another culture and be like, they must be so different. Like, we couldn't even possibly understand. Like, they're just like completely different. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. They're exactly the same. There's like a couple minor details that are different. The functions, like, of our behavior are slightly modified, but
that's probably like an extension of like a little bit of racism, and like I mean Japan is like a vassal of America, because so we have like an intimate relationship with them, and also in a fascination because we have integrated so much of our culture and our economy and our military into their nation. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, it even reminds me of in the David Graeber book, he talks about how French liberals learned that there was a Jesuit book about Ontario tribe, the Wendat tribe in Ontario, and they were the Jesuit priests are documenting Kondiaronk, who's like a Native American philosopher. They're documenting his thoughts, writing them down in this book, and the French liberals were reading it, and they're like, This is so similar to us. Like, this couldn't possibly be what he said. This is the Jesuit priests, like, injecting their Western ideas into this Kondiaronk's mind. And so they completely threw out the book as just, like, Jesuit nonsense. And now the historians have sort of, like, reopened it and examined all the new documents. And it's basically just exactly who Kondiaronk was and thought. And it was kind of this, like, it's racism, but it's like this new, should have like its own unique word, where it's like you think you're being anti-racist, but you're being racist by thinking that someone on the other side of the world can't be like you.
Yeah, that's like implicit bias.
Orientalism. Kind
of stuff. Yeah, but it reminded me of this, that idea of just the fact that we're all very similar, and that's okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't really think there are like DS1 or whatever, that kind of like Bible of mental illnesses. I'm sure, I mean, maybe there is, but I don't think those really vary from country to country, you know, like they're not reading, the psychologists in China aren't necessarily dealing with different forms of depression. They're just dealing with people experiencing depression through different means, you know?
Yeah.
So that's like the unifying thing. But it's weird that, like I said, he has this sort of like snow globe like ending of like viewing himself in that sense, and then still decides to kill himself, because like it's in real clearly life. yeah because it's like it's clearly just like this long meditation about the subjective nature of like looking at life in this depressed, negative way.
Yeah, it could be his worship. He worships art in a way. It's kind of like his only god is art, and like talking about art. And he has this relationship with a woman who's like also like same as him, like atheist and like obsessed with art. And they have scenes
cartoon,
together.
He's a cartoonist, right? I don't know, it's like art.
He's a writer and a cartoonist, but he like loves art, and they always talk about how they stay up late at night and discuss poetry and art. And they have a game, mm-hmm. which reminded me of like a scene from like a Ben Stiller movie or like Garden State or like 500 Days of Summer, where mm-hmm. he's like, her name's Hariki, and they're up late at night, and they're like, they call it the synonym game, and he's like, what is a woman? He's like, woman. And then she's like, entrails. And he's like, yeah. Like, it's like this poet back and forth game. Like, what does this word mean poetically? And they mm-hmm. just keep going back and they play that game for a while. They do synonyms and antonyms. And it's just, I don't know. Yeah, they kind of worship art. I forgot where I was going with this. So in the sense
every
of...
point.
In the
every
sense
point
of,
we've had, we just lost.
In the sense of why he kills himself, I think he turns his whole life into a performance. And to me, him killing himself is like he's always fantasizing about himself and kind of thinking about himself in the non-real apparent way. He's always just kind of thinking about himself like a story. And to me, like him killing himself at the end of it, in this world that's full of, you know, horrible government and society and pretense and all this falseness. And so like he's the truth teller and he's killing himself, like, is a great story. So like that's what's leading him to do it. Not so like
yeah.
an apparent yeah, real feeling.
Well, yeah. Like he's to like obviously commodify this thing in his head and make it into a story, to like fetishize these things and like put them into a story as like the main character. Like it's kind of like main character syndrome.
And he becomes like a hero, which is kind of what everyone wants, to be a hero. But
wait, how does he become the hero?
He's the hero of this story. Like if you think about the story I just told, like he's a hero. Like he, against all odds, he's doing what is right in that theory of society in the world that he's concocted.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is a little bit lame.
Yeah. It's stupid.
To sort of like, it's very narcissistic and like self-involved, which is what happens when you get depressed, because nothing about you wants to like take in the outside world or give anything to it. So
yeah, he lacks humility.
The best he
too,
can do is,
I would say,
what
he lacks humility. I wrote down that whenever he's talking about an idea or like a big deep problem that might exist in the world, he's always talking about it like Superman lifting a dumbbell. Like he's just like, oh, this is so easy for me.
Yeah.
Like yeah, he's never humbling himself before how hard like ideas and problems are to unpack.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I think the reason he did eventually kill himself, because he clearly has some thread of a thought of like resolution with the sense of like viewing himself from the outside perspective. I think he really just killed himself because he drank too much and it that like took over mentally.
Yeah. No,
and
I have a quote
like,
here.
There's no way that you can do that when you're so, your senses and your thoughts are so dulled.
I have a quote about that. He says, my uneasiness over having become a drug addict actually made me seek more of the drug. So yeah, just like a spiraling down. Actually, the original title of the book was Failed, like the original translation is more accurately Failed Human. So that's kind of how he thinks about himself.
No, I definitely empathize with that. Like the more, yeah, it's the same thing we were saying at the beginning of like when you get to 27 and you start to like kind of identify yourself with a certain mode of like loser or whatever, that's when you will react to that. You're going to start reacting to that after, you know, unless you're strong, you know, and you like change for the better, or you stop bad habits, and yeah.
It was actually in, it's stupid, but it was in, I saw that new Freud movie with Anthony Hopkins. And they bring
up Oppenheimer?
That, no, it's called Freud's Last Session.
Okay.
Oppenheimer.
No.
Oh, talking no. about.
Joking.
You know that stupid joke where, or thing that people go, insanity is doing the same thing again and again with expecting mm-hmm. different results.
Yeah.
And then in Freud's movie, so then C.S. Lewis goes, so you're saying sanity is being able to change your mind. And I kind of like that.
Sanity.
Like yeah. the most sane thing, the most sane human being is a person changing their mind.
Yeah. That's I mean, that's what happens.
Peak of sanity.
This also does have an echo of like On the Road, which I love at the end of that book is, you know, and it, he also lost his battles kind of mm-hmm. pretty much, but you know, he's just being like a rampaging drunk and like asshole and his whole life's kind of falling apart, I think. And then at the end, he kind of just wakes up and turns a corner. He's like, huh, everything's okay. You know, I like that. I love that ending in that way. And I also think about that with like being depressed. Like you just think about, well, I don't know. That just fucking happens sometimes. And it's not going to happen if you're like, you know, doing fucking, what's he addicted to? Like painkillers and
painkillers and alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's not going to, you're never going to turn, your brain isn't never going to turn a corner naturally. Like when you do that, because I mean, I was sober for September and then I'd been sober for January. And I can already tell, like my body and my brain is rewarding me like with my sleep already. And mm-hmm. just all the pillars underneath the sort of house, I guess, if you want to imagine it like a house, like on stilts and like on the beach or whatever, you know, like those are all just like very, a lot stronger and healthy. And, you know, your house isn't going to collapse just when it gets hit by waves and stuff. And I don't know. I in the topic of sobriety, I just feel like it's way more interesting and productive and like fun. Even though like when you are at places where people are drinking and stuff, it is like super boring and sucks. But yeah, like it's, you feel like you're on a journey closer to like God or something. I think that's like an AA thing, is like sacrificing yourself to, or giving yourself up or something to God or something, which, that's like, yeah, that's just, I don't know, Yozo just completely refuses that at every possibility and just goes down that road. That's kind of like, you have to make the, that's like the intervention thing, is like you have to make the decision to change.
Yeah, which again is like with the Freud Marx thing there, that's why I think this, like, I always think about like, are people like this plagued by rigid ideas? And the rigid idea at the time was the human mind. This is like Freud, Marx, and like John Locke. The human mind is like stone, and the beginnings of life, our parents and society, are etching into that stone, and it's stone. And that kind of was like how they thought of the world. And now we know, science more objectively shows us that the mind is not like stone. It's like an etch-a-sketch. And you can really just shake it up whenever you want. It's got, you know, obviously the more trauma, it's going to be harder to do that, but it really is a flexible body.
Well,
you know, it, which is a hopeful thing to think about and to not.
Yeah, I mean, he never has a moment where his etch-a-sketch is shaken, you know, like he's never challenged on his ideas in a meaningful way. Like the only, like the closest person to him. I don't know, actually. I don't know if I'm thinking of the new Godzilla or this book, but maybe it's like inspired by it. But like, I think he meets a woman who has a kid, and I don't know. But the woman that he tries to kill himself with, you know, she just totally. I mean, the reason they sort of fall in love is because they just have the same dumb, fucking depressed ideas about everything.
Yeah. Right? It's like 500 Days of Summer, like Manic Pixie shit.
Yeah. And I've met people, and I think that is really honestly like the biggest thing that helps me is like meeting people who challenge your ideas and like completely turn your like perspective of the world around. And it not even doesn't, it's not even like a romantic thing. Like, you know, it's just anyone who also, it definitely helps in the beginning if they're very exciting, you know. Yeah. You realize you're excited because it's like new and you're like, oh my God, I didn't realize people like this existed or people like this could be that cool or like that, this or that, that funny, that, you know, prescient or whatever. And then you start to like kind of, you're welcomed back into the sort of like childlike wonder of like discovering things and like being excited to discover things.
Mm. Yeah, and if yeah, you're so gonna, that's something if you're I'm gonna always rise waiting from the for. Ashes, you gotta burn, baby.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely that's a thing too that's helped me with. I mean the journey or not journey, Hero's Journey, like the Thousand Faces book. Just that, I mean that book is so like spiritual. It just connects you to
yeah,
like a deeper thing in being human. But for it did for me. But yeah, you just feel like eager to. Identify
eager
those.
To die almost is what I think about.
Well, yeah, yeah,
a spiritual yeah. death.
Yeah, eager to which find is out what a hero holding you back and
like, just like in real life, when a hero does something heroic, they're usually risking their life, and that's why we react so strongly to it. And so I feel like that's the same thing on the spiritual plane. That's why the stories have that literally happen. Usually, is it's a reflection of internal life. When you are willing to die and excited to die spiritually, it's good. It just
yeah.
feels good.
And yeah. And yeah. Like in the sort of alternative to that is like the siren song. It's like the drugs and the alcohol and whatever it is kind of like soothing you and like lulling you into a death as opposed to like a death that is ultimate death. It's not real, like good shit.
Yeah, I mean honestly that again could be like another projection of like his body desires a spiritual death, and so he misinterprets the signal and just thinks, oh, this must be I desire death.
Yeah,
because they're both, you know, the word death, you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to bring up, we're getting close to the big theory unravel. Maybe I should just do it.
You should just hit it because I gotta start. Yeah.
So very early on, he talks a lot about Catholicism. He's kind of obsessed with it as a kid.
Here we go.
And as an adult. And one of the ideas, class, that he's obsessed with is guilty conscience or original sin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, what Catholicism is about and what original sin is about could be, this is my theory, is the sin of being conscious, and which is, you know, what happens to Adam and Eve in the garden is they eat from the tree of knowledge and now they're aware that they're naked. They're aware that they're an animal and they sort of become above animal status because of this. But God condemns them for that act because now they're aware of good and evil and life gets complicated now. So it feels like a crime against nature. I'm just reading what I wrote. Wait, let me digest this. Okay, so the sin of being conscious, I hope this still makes sense. The sin of being conscious, which feels like a crime against nature because we are deluded into thinking we control everything about our lives with this consciousness. He no longer feels human living among people who don't, because this never happens in his life. People aren't talking about this distinction of being a human, like the fact that we are conscious in this crazy new way. So he doesn't have a compadre to sort of discuss this with. So he feels alienated. So he feels not like the people around him, but also not like animals around him. So he's not like anybody.
Well, that's kind of like the reason, you know, I reject nihilism or whatever. It's like you're looking behind the curtain or like behind the stage of life. And it's like, well, what are you really going to see back there that you think is important, you know?
Yeah. Like, and the real thing is you can't see.
You don't want to stay back there and see all that stuff all the time. You want to go on in the seats and watch and like take part or be in the play.
Yeah. And the realization that the consciousness really is just an observer and doesn't have a lot of control is something that he doesn't sacrifice himself to. But so he feels like he's not like animals. He's not like the people around him. So he's completely unique and he's like nobody else. And then, so I wrote, in order to make his external match the internal, he lives a life of constant desolation and he almost savors it in order to make himself flawed. So in order to make his life match the idea of original sin, the idea of a flawed animal, which is his, in his mind, an animal with consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, he totally so actualizes
like,
that.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying is like, he was always obsessed with that idea, and his life is him actualizing that concept into a visual metaphor, which is him having a flawed life, a character having a flawed life and killing himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's well, like, yeah, I mean, it's, his life is a play.
It's still surprising to me that this author like did kill himself. And like, again, yeah, it just seems like he just simply lost his battle with his addictions. Basically. I don't know if he's really battling it, but yeah, if he ever like attempted to stop, because I think in the book, he just kind of comes out of like a bad drunk and high and stuff and kind of stops and then eventually goes back.
Yeah, I don't even think of him so much like a drug addict just because he's such a smarty pants that I think of him more on like an ideological level, like what chains of ideas are holding him down. And then he's mm-hmm. using these drugs as just merely like numbing agents so he doesn't realize his ideas are bad, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing with depression. If it hits you as a kid, it's really bad because you kind of look behind the curtain of life too soon and you kind of stay back there too long, so mm-hmm. long that you realize when you come out and you have to be, not to keep this metaphor going, but you have to be on stage or watching whatever the play, I don't know, but you actually have to, you do have to take part or you will be a loser or you will die or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Which could also be a realization that he's underdeveloped, you know, like because he was so looking behind the curtain, sort of misdirecting his attention, he was underdeveloped. Like his body that was behind the curtain got sort of entropied. And so when he comes back from behind the curtain, he's like, oh shit, I have a baby body. And so he's, you know, he's embarrassed to show it. So he hides behind a mask.
He's a behind the curtain baby body. That's the treatise. Yeah, I mean, it's like being behind the curtain is interesting, but you don't want to live there. You want to see the play.
Well,
you
your body doesn't play, live there. You so watch the play. Yeah, your body will entropy.
Okay. Oh, I don't know about I don't know what you're doing with the body and the thoughts.
Well, because like when you look behind a curtain, just your head pokes through. Your body's still back in the motherland.
No, but I'm saying many people peek behind that curtain when they're probably coming of age, right? Or like if they're
healthy.
I'd
say coming mentally. To consciousness, yeah, like 10.
Well, no, not 10. I would say, well, yeah, people who are, you know, they're 10 or whatever, they peek behind there and they go, oh, okay. And they get a little angsty and stuff. And then the ones that are going to lead to a path like this are the ones that like just hang out back there. And they think it's like cool and they think it's superior to like be in this place. It's like, meanwhile, the rest of the world is partying on the other side in a sense, like not actually literally they are sometimes, but like they are enjoying the show.
Yeah. They're back. They're back in paradise. I mean, if the journey is like we start in paradise in the garden, we eat from the tree of knowledge and become full of sin and, you know, depressed. At the end of the journey in the, you know, the paradiso, paradise lost, is we regain paradise, which is we come back to the garden, even though we're conscious. So to live in the garden with consciousness is the divine, you know, transformation. And he's clearly because
consciousness is the original sin. Okay.
Because consciousness, yeah, is the original sin, is the original sort of like hard problem humans were given by God or, you know, nature, which is be conscious and try not to destroy yourself with that power.
Yeah.
Because you got to realize it's just one of your powers. It's not you. It's just a little power you have. It's not, you're not, you don't have the power of God. You don't, you can't know everything about you just because you have consciousness.
Okay, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. I guess we got to rate this shit.
Yeah, it's a tricky rate. Because it is like a great document of that person. And so it's like very, you know, it makes you realize things about yourself sometimes when like he says something super negative and you're like, oh shit, I kind of felt that way. Yeah. You kind of see yourself in a mirror for a second and you're like, oh, that is a shitty way to be. Like, fuck.
Yeah. Well, it's scary because... that was not the word I wanted to use.
Yikes.
It's not scary. It's difficult to rate a book because this one is like hard to read. It literally took me like a year to read it because I was being lazy. But
yeah, you were being lazy. I sped through this book in about a week. I think it's a very easy read. The language, he doesn't use any tricky words. It's very simple words, which
no,
I
like. It's not. That's not why it's difficult for me. It's difficult because it's so like, like negativity after every sentence, you know?
Yeah. There is very little joy.
I don't know if I'm just being stereotypical here, but it does have that sort of Japanese briskness to it. Like,
It's like Ozu steel. Films, you know, like very simple, square, blocky.
Yeah, I mean, what's that movie with the guy on the swing?
Oh, yeah, Ikiru?
Usamu?
Ikiru? No, Ikiru.
Yeah, Ikiru. Thank Ikiru. You. Yeah, it just has, I don't know, that's kind of also like the pacing of those movies at that time, but...
yeah.
I don't know.
It's a Japanese aesthetic to be clean. It's like their food, you know? It's very clean and simple.
Well, I don't know. Let's not... What about fucking katsu curry?
Dude, I cook messy. Japanese dishes every day. Don't fucking come at me.
Well, okay. We just don't want to cast a wide net. So what are you going to give this out of 1,000%?
It's like French cuisine.
1,000% scale. Excuse me?
1,000%?
1,000% scale is back. After a year hiatus. Shouts out to Valentina.
I wish I said this note. This was a good note. Should I say it?
Yeah.
Okay. So he doubts.
Don't say it.
He doubts love. Kidding. This is what I wrote. He doubts love. This is why in the kindness of strangers is the only one he trusts. In this case, prostitutes. In whose arms he feels in the presence of Mary. Mother of God.
Yeah. It's so funny like, you say that because I'm reading a Napoleon biography right now. I'm just kind of flying through it. It's huge. It's like 900 pages. But he actually lost his virginity to a prostitute, which I'm sure wasn't very uncommon. But Napoleon is described as being very gloomy and like gray-eyed and shit as a kid, which I don't know. Like he has a very fascinating... He's not like Hitler where, I don't know, it's a sidetrack, but he's not like Hitler, you know, in the sense of Hitler was clearly fucking traumatized and evil from the time.
Very similar. You know. That's a good point. Very similar to this guy. I would say psychologically, Hitler and our lead here.
Yeah. I mean,
both artists, atheists, you know, sort of obsessed with ideology and society and how it can be improved.
Yeah, I don't know. But I was just making a point about Napoleon, but Napoleon never had like really like true hatred, honestly. Like even though he was a rival of England, and you know he came to power in France, he never had hate in his heart and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
That's like Napoleon Joaquin Phoenix played him very friendly. I thought he seemed very friendly.
I don't know. That whole movie is like just seemingly like pointless. I don't know. It just makes me wish. I don't know if Spielberg's still making the HBO Napoleon series or something. I heard that, but I don't know. It really cheapens like the dimensions of him as a character just because he is really interesting. But yeah, what were you saying about Hitler?
The character types.
So, and, you know, like people say like suicide is selfish. I think it's like an extension of not a selfish in with respect to other people, but obsession with yourself and an obsession with evaluating yourself all the time. And yes, obviously when you do eventually do it, or if you do it, it's selfish in the fact that you're harming everyone that's ever known you. But yeah, like it's really like the last stop on that train of you know, rumination, self-obsession, you know, that's why it's selfish. Because all you've thought about, it's all that's bothered you, you know, if it's a thing that is part of a long, you know, a long journey of like thoughts and events and mind changes and stuff and depression. If it's something that's like, you know, a short-term thing, like something happened, you're like, oh, I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah. Well, I feel like either
that's
way.
That's a different thing. That's still selfish in the way that I said, you know.
I would say it's very similar. Like even if you have a cancer of the body that's eating away at you and you kill yourself, either way, you're killing yourself because your body's composition, as a doctor would say, is weak and dying. And so either your body is dying or your spirit is dying. Either way, your body's just in this weak state, and that's why people kill themselves, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been thinking about a lot of, just like spirit, in the sense of being sober, and like towards the end of December, I was drinking a lot and eating a lot, and it was definitely like dampening my spirit. And I was thinking about when people talk about if they believe in God and they say, no, but I'm spiritual. I always took that as like, I believe in like, I don't know, ghosts and cherubs and shit. rather than, you know, like the health of your soul as it relates to sort of like the metaphysical shit.
Yeah.
With how you interact with life and stuff. So yeah, I've been getting more spiritual, and I think a lot of the books we've chosen are definitely like we've said, like self-help adjacent and probably like incel adjacent.
Well, we didn't even pick this book. We got to mention that.
Yeah. This
we were book supposed was to have chosen a guest today.
Shouts out to you. We know.
Shout out you to know, you, B. You know who you are.
B, we love you. We'll call your code name B. You are a close friend and we love you, and we do not have any.
I'll never forgive you.
We do not have any qualms with you because of this. I think we got a nice cherry out of this. It was chosen by a woman, and I will say a successful woman. Both spiritually and whatever.
A good reader too.
Good reader and a good person. Probably better than both of us.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, but you know this. I don't know what I was saying. Most of our books are like self-helpy, but you could also just say they're like spiritual books.
I just think.
I mean, all books are that way, right? If they're not nonfiction.
Any book fiction. That I call art, or, you know, high art, whatever you want to call it. Art to me just is stuff about the human soul. And so of course it's going to be categorized as like self-helpy because it's about, you know, it's about the human soul, baby.
Well, yeah, it's like you're staring into this orb, you know, trying. And I was thinking the Odyssey immediately came to mind. Or the have you read that?
The Odyssey, yeah.
Maybe we should just do that to crunch one out. But
I'd have to reread it.
I don't know. You know, that's still looking at the human soul. It's just through a different mode, I guess you could say.
Yeah, through mythological metaphor.
Through mythological metaphors and plots, and, you know, that's a drama.
I was actually just reading something about the, because you mentioned the Siren Song. The concept at play in the scene where Odysseus ties himself to the pole so he's Odysseus. Not tempted is
Odysseus.
He's enacting forethought. So he's using his conscious mind to protect himself against his the lesser parts of his himself. Nature.
Yeah.
Protect himself against himself. He's using his forethought and his consciousness, and he's saying, I know I will want to fuck these sirens, so tie me to the pole now.
I don't think it's
before
about
before we get there.
They don't fuck the sirens. They just listen to the song.
Well, then what's so bad about that?
They get intoxicated and then...
Oh, they fall into like, that hole. There's a hole with a monster next to them.
Yeah.
Right? Or something?
I don't think they get... Those are harpies. I think you're thinking of harpies.
Yeah, sorry. No, I'm thinking of no. I'm thinking of Oh Brother, We're Out There.
Okay.
They turn it into
totally
like
a different track. Here.
No, the movie is a reflection of the story of the Odyssey.
Well, I think this book, you know, obviously, like I said, it was a hard read for me. So I don't. That's a dilemma with, you know, is it gonna get more or less points on the 1000% scale? Probably not. If I'm being, you know, righteous.
Well, remember, but the scale is supposed to be what was the author trying to do and how well did they succeed?
Well, I mean, we could spend another 30 minutes discussing that, what he was trying to do, but I think he succeeded. I also think, yeah, it's the thing is like, is it a good, can you make a book like about this subject that's a good read, quote unquote, you know, but.
Well, it's more so like, who are you, the reader, and what is your relationship with this author's ideas? Because like that'll, if you like, if you're a communist and you're like, love this guy's ideas, you're going to be reading this like, yahoo.
Well, I think to that point, it's very universal. I think he succeeded in sort of unraveling this big, thick onion, you know, but... I'm not going to read this ever again for sure.
Yeah.
But I also was left with a nugget of gold that I think I'll keep in my soul
Ooh.
For a while.
What was
you know,
that?
Like a very, you know, like I said, I was drinking a lot at the time and like I was starting to understand the mechanics of like, I don't think I'm an alcoholic, but I'm like beginning to have, I'm
You're
having
developing.
A problem. Yeah, and I'm, you know, I'm starting to see the forest for the trees of like the mechanics of addiction and the shit like that. And I think this and why I was drinking and like why I was feeling sad and the ending of this was kind of like a refreshing flash of water on the face of in the similar way I said of like on the road, because I was also depressed at that point where it just you know, that says that in a different way, but it splashes the water in a different way. But this one is splashed the water in a very specific way that I was experiencing at the time, which was like, yeah, he was a good guy, almost like an angel, but he just drank too much. Like that's, oh, okay. That's the problem, you know?
Yeah. Others are always so good at seeing our faults. Then we suck at it, you know?
No. Well, we're better at seeing our faults. That's what.
No, mean. No. In the sense of like, when someone looks at, what's his name?
Evaluating what's wrong.
Evaluating what's wrong is like a doctor would and be like,
what's actually wrong?
Oh, he was drinking too much. That was the problem. But he was drinking. And then you just follow it deeper, which is still drinking too much. He's drinking too much because he's drinking at all because he, the guy, desires to be in a different state of mind. So the drugs put him in a different state of mind, but he's just misinterpreting what that state of mind change should be, which is just a death, a spiritual death and a rebirth into a new line of thinking.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think just sum it up, but let's try to end it. But like, nothing really ever got to him. Like no like savior or event. Really, there was just like the old guy Flatfish or whatever just kind of took him out of harm's way, really, but never changed him in the way that the people I have in my life did.
Those and again, those though, we're trusting the author Maybe there's this whole thing that happened to him where someone challenged him, but he disregarded it and thought it frivolous and stupid. Like maybe someone came to him with some sort of religious doctrine that was sure. probably helpful innocently, but he didn't listen to it.
Well, that's the refusal. I mean, like the movie buff dude, but that's the refusal of the call to action or whatever, right?
Yeah, he didn't. There's not quite that moment, is there?
I guess
there's those small moments, like I said, when Flatfish is literally asking him to open up, and he's just says no. And he's just like, I'm just going to keep savoring my desolation.
Yeah. This book was in my bag for so long, it like being unread, that it just like looks like a fucking shredded piece of shit. So let's get the ratings out here. Let's get these out quick. I'll give this one, I think my thoughts on it, my rating has definitely increased as we've talked about it, unpacked it. But I don't know. I'd give it like a, I'm glad it's short. I think it's short. The fact that it's shorter is really nice, 'cause I think any asshole could make this. They could really draw this one out.
Yeah.
That's going to boost to 50 points up, or 500 points up the scale, percent scale. I'm going to do... I'm going to do 825%.
Wow. Yeah, I would agree with what you said. Like, this book is tough to read, but I'm glad it's short. And I honestly, I applaud his honesty. I think we need more honesty like this in the world. And it's just like, if only he just spoke about this in front of like a congregation, a group of humans, would he have, you know, realized his folly if he would just humble himself and listen. But I think we don't read enough books like this in school and stuff of just raw, brutal honesty. And so you might waste some years in your life walking down this path, and you're just tracing the footsteps of 1,000 souls before you, making mistakes again and again for thousands of years because you just didn't read a book. And maybe if you just read this book, you'd look in the mirror for a second and be like, oh shit, like, fine.
Yeah. So well, I mean, the same reason it could be dangerous for a young person to read this and, you know, identify with it and then just do it, you know, and not understand the takeaways.
Well, that's the big problem of art. It's like you can give people a mirror, but it really is up to them how to feel about the reflection.
Yeah. And I, you know, you don't want to trust a kid with that, or, you know, in the same way with, Rest and Relaxation, there are, I think I've seen it like on TikToks or whatever. Like there are girls who are like, yeah, I'm like that.
I'm talking about a future world that doesn't exist yet, but like there's a world we could live in that's brutal.
There's a world.
We're brutally honest with each other and we're mean to each other in a loving way. And maybe we're mean to kids now, you know, maybe we like, tell us what you think, Tiffany, tell us what you really think. And we get her to talk and she tells us and we go, you're a fucking idiot, Tiffany. You realize you're doing this? You know, it's a little tough love, but I think it's, you know, it's for the best. It's for everyone's better well-being. But I would give this book, in terms of, you know, accomplishing that potentially, obviously in a Wolf of Wall Street way where you could have the Patrick Bateman champions, but I would give this an 846.
All right. You can't, I thought it had to be a multiple of 5.
Oh, is that a rule?
Yeah.
Let's round down, 845.
Holy shit. 845, and I, what did I say, 825?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, we'll keep
probably
these
not the
coming.
Funniest episode we've done, but...
Yeah, probably least,
you know, it's
funny.
It's a pretty depressing book. Sobering, maybe.
So are we going to keep this podcast going, or what's, you know... What do they have to expect?
I think we're going to do Aldous Huxley's The Island, right?
Yeah. Oh, shit. We've never revealed the next book.
I do want to fly through this Napoleon biography as fast as I can. I will stop reading it if we need to read The Island, but I am enjoying. I kind of learned something about myself just reading it. Reading any nonfiction, my favorite writer shouts out is Adrian Goldsworthy. I just love nonfiction. It's so easy for me to read, and I'm so like endlessly fascinated by history and stuff. So it's very easy for me. But yeah, I'm more geared to like nonfiction, honestly. I have trouble reading fiction, but yeah, we're gonna do The Island next, I guess, with a guest.
Yeah, we'll try to have guests in a timely manner this time. It's literally been a year.
One season. Every season is like one episode.
Wow, we'll be 80 years old, still doing it.
Yeah, episode 80. That's what happens when you're lazy. Yep. When I'm lazy, but yep. Okay. Thanks for reading or listening. Maybe if you read the book, thank you so much for that.
Thanks for following along.
And for listening. Thanks for following along, and I hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time.
になってゆくのです。